the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon. How are you all doing? 51551 for your texts or ray@rte.ie for your emails. And speaking of emails, I'm going to start with this because we got an email in overnight and the subject line was keep your phone on for the vaccine. And a listener said, hey, Catherine, yesterday was a great day in our household as my dad got his first dose of the vaccine. He's in the over 70s age group and didn't expect it for a few weeks yet. At 5 o'clock yesterday evening, he got a phone call from his GP saying they had leftover vaccines and asking how quickly could he come by. Of course, he sprinted there. It was such a relief to know we're moving forward and we're all making progress. The reason I'm getting in touch is he actually missed the first phone call, and it was only because I heard the phone and we rang back straight away that he got his vaccine. Please make sure you have your phone on loud and close by you, especially at the end of the day, as you could be invited for an unexpected vaccine. Hold firm, brighter days are ahead. And a big thank you to the listener who sent that in. And you know, I just thought it was such a good reminder, because it is getting to the stage now where we all know someone who has got the vaccine or scheduled to get the vaccine, or someone that knows someone. And my dad actually got his, he rang me yesterday, he's scheduled for his next week. And it's such a great relief. But you never know when you are going to get that call. So as that listener says, phones on, keep them out of the handbags, keep them off silent. And the other thing is, answer a private number. Sure, we've all gotten into the habit of not answering numbers that we don't recognise. So make sure you answer any call that comes in, because it could be the call up for your vaccine. So anyway, great news for that listener, and thanks again for the advice. Now, we are probably, is it fair to say, all feeling slightly more irritable than normal these days? I think it is, and it's fair enough. But Jim Nugent posting on Twitter made me laugh this morning, because he was posting about the small things people do that annoy you. And he got some funny responses. Deirdre had tweeted, yesterday a lady walked around the supermarket standing to the side of her trolley and pulling it, thereby taking up twice as much space. I didn't care for it. Nose whistles was another one that came up a few times. People who say Pacific instead of specific. Letting someone through in traffic who doesn't wave back. I mean, those people should not be on the road. Honest to God, is there anything more irritating and rude? When people don't have their card or money ready to pay at the supermarket till, that was irksome for somebody else. Jerry was another tweeter. It always bugs me when people have 085 for a mobile number. Buttering toast on the counter instead of a plate. I could totally relate to that. I do that all the time and it drives Porrick nuts. And the other thing that I do, well, I mean, I could be here for 4 hours if I was to tell you what I did that drove him nuts. But the other thing that I do is, you know, if I'm doing a stir fry and if, you know, chicken or veg or whatever, and I've chopped everything on the chopping board, lashed it into the frying pan or the wok, and then I feel that the chunks of vegetable or chicken, they're too big. So I get the knife, the big knife out, and I start sort of cutting it in the frying pan or in the wok, and it just drives him mental. So I try not to do it. I try to get my portions right before it goes in. And then I was like, what annoys me about what he does? And straight away, it's it all the time. Why do people put big plates in the front of the dishwasher? You know, you're stacking the dishwasher. Put the big plates in the back. You know, everything in the dishwasher has to have its own place. But anyway, get them off your chest. The most annoying things that people do that just ruin your day. It can just ruin the day from the outset. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. What else? Yes, I watched Sheila Shoiga's documentary last night on miscarriage on T.G. Cahir. Did anyone see it? I'd love to know what you thought. 51551, because I thought it was very, really very good. And it was definitely a hard watch, and it is the first time that the subject of miscarriage has been properly tackled on Irish TV. And as you can imagine, there were a lot of difficult stories of loss and grief, including Sheila's own, and she put it out there. And but I got a great sense of encouragement and hope, really, that people are starting to talk about it more openly. And I just think we need to do a lot more of that. So a big well done to her and all the team, because it's a difficult, and it was a difficult subject to discuss in parts, obviously. But the other thing that I thought was lovely and wonderful about it was listening to the Irish language for an hour and listening to Irish women speaking Oscailge about something that we don't hear an awful lot about. And I don't watch an awful lot of TG Cahir, and they do amazing content and amazing documentaries. It was just lovely. Sheila's an amazing fluent speaker anyway, and she overall, she did a sensitive issue, such justice. So if you've seen it, let me know. If you haven't seen it, the TG Cahir Player is the place to go to have a look at it. So well done to all involved there. Yesterday, amongst other things, we were talking about public toilets or the lack of them. And I saw then Colin Harmon from 3FE Coffee tweeting about it today. And he said people that run hospitality businesses are used to them being used as de facto public toilets, and people expect it of us. What gets me is that you can build a 100,000 square metre retail park and not be required to provide any toilets. And he goes on to say, as an example, we opened a cafe and a cafe restaurant with about 50 seats, and planning required us to have 7 toilets. I was like, what? That sounds quite excessive to have 7 toilets in a 50-seater. But again, it's just going back to what we were talking about yesterday, the burden, and it's really been noticeable over the last 12 months when we haven't had cafes and restaurants opened. It has fallen to restaurant owners to provide public toilet spaces when it shouldn't really be their job. And we got caught up in talking about tea yesterday and making the perfect cup of tea, but the amount of emails and texts that we got in about public toilets, and I'm just going to go through a few of them here that came in yesterday that I never got to. Catherine, I think clean public toilets are essential because nature cannot wait. I also think people should not have to pay as they go because we don't always have money out with us. Public toilets on my local beach in Galway are locked far too early now, even when the beach is packed with people during the beautiful summer evenings. It's disgraceful. And then Paul in Kinsale, the public toilets in Ireland in general are appalling. I find it very embarrassing when I witness visitors to our country using them. They're dirty, badly ventilated, seldom cleaned, in desperate need of upgrading. We have a great tourism industry. We have amazing chefs and world-class food ingredients, great hotels, restaurant, pubs and attractions too. Our toilets are archaic and show us in a very bad light. A solution is to set them up to be commercially viable by putting in a charge and man them accordingly. So two very different takes on that there. Khloe Kardashian is all over the news, and you might go, so what? I don't care. I am a Kardashians fan, I have to say. It's my guilty pleasure. But you know what? It's basically what's happened is that this big debate has started, and it's kind of created headlines all over the world about Photoshop and filters and social media and body image. And essentially, a picture of her was posted in a bikini by a pool. It was posted by a mistake. It was posted by her assistant without her consent. Can you imagine how that assistant is 10 feet under somewhere in Los Angeles? But anyway, she got it removed, I think, from Twitter. Or was it Instagram? I think it was Twitter, because it was posted without her consent. Now, she looked stunning in this photograph. It was a really natural shot. The sun was shining in her eyes. She was squinting. You could tell it was unedited. But she has an amazing body, which she works bloody damn hard for. But it doesn't go with her brand. And this was the argument, because the Kardashians have built this billion-dollar brand on boobs and bums, and it's micromanaged and it's photoshopped and it's professionally shot and it's polished, and that's how they've made their billions, you know. But the argument is that it is so far from, you know, realistic reality shots, and the effect that it can have on young girls and boys who are looking at these highly filtered, highly staged photographs, and you know, are seeing them in, this is what's normal, this is what's natural, you know. So that's it's the argument that has been going on for a while. And look, at I use a filter on Instagram. Nobody, even wedding photos, whether you're on social media or not, you know, you want to put your best foot forward. You want to get your colour done. You want to have your hair. You want to look your best. That's what she's made. That's her brand. Her brand is so micromanaged and so professional looking. But where does it end? Where does it stop? And where does it start to get dangerous? So that is one that's not going to go away. What else? Yes, have a listen to this. Now, Now, on first listen, right, you might think that's pretty bad classical music, but bear with me. That music was played by a miniature train set hitting against glasses filled with water. Yes, you heard me correctly. It was a miniature train hitting against glasses filled with water. Let's have another listen. So it is the Hamburg's miniature Wonderland Museum in Germany. And obviously the museum has been closed through COVID and they've had many quiet days at the office. And the workers there did this project. And essentially what they did was they attached little tiny spoons to a model train. They lined the train track with thousands of water-filled glasses. I think there was over 3,000 glasses. And as the train passes, the spoons which are tied to it hit the glasses and it taps out the melody of well-known classical music songs. So there you go, founder and model train enthusiast. You'd have to be a model train enthusiast, wouldn't you? Frederick Braun and his team had loads of time on their hands and they spent weeks setting up this musical project. You can actually go on and have a look at it online. It's actually brilliant when you see it. And they've earned themselves a Guinness World Record for the longest melody played by a model train. One more time. Yes, there you go. Oh God, your annoying texts have come in thick and fast here. Men wearing shorts in wintertime. Catherine, as a delivery driver, what annoys me most in the world is when someone calls for the green man at the pedestrian lights, then doesn't wait. Why do you do this? It drives me insane. Somebody else, when someone says their number the wrong way, e.g. instead of 087, 4 double whatever, whatever, they say 0874. Okay. Emer, I make dinner and leave every press in the kitchen open. It drives my partner crackers. I'm a bit of all out and then clean up afterwards. I'm a bit like that myself, Emer. I hate the sound of people eating crisps, says Harley. The closer to my ear, the more I want to kill them. Catherine, my husband puts his new toothbrushes in the shared toothbrush holder and doesn't take out his old toothbrush. Claire, divorce the man. Divorce him. Get rid of him. Well done for getting hubby to put the plates into the dishwasher at all, says somebody else. Best advice for the best clean. Big plate, small plate, big plate, small plate. There you go. Who knew? Anyway, they keep going on and on and on. Catherine, I saw Sheila Shoiga's show last night. As someone who has been through two miscarriages, it really struck a chord with me. The one thing I really agreed with from the programme is that the response you get from the few people you might tell can really influence whether you tell many more. I got a lot of, sure, wasn't it too early to get excited anyway, etc. For anyone who might be a shoulder for someone to cry on, please don't belittle the loss, no matter how early that loss may be. Thank you so much. Absolutely. And that is a point very well made. Okay, it is time to tell you about our quiz today. Because we have been running our quiz, as you know, for the last couple of weeks. And our prize this week is from Faith Leg Hotel in Waterford, where you can explore the sunny southeast and their beautiful coastal drives and beaches and cycling trails, all on the doorstep of this beautiful 4-star property. So the prize is 2 nights away with breakfast on both mornings, and you get dinner on one night of your choice in the Roseville Rooms restaurant. So there you go. Look forward to it. A long summer weekend away, and you can explore the Waterford Greenway, which is stunning. It's a cycleway between Waterford and Dungarvan. So we are looking for 2 players as always, and the question today is, in which Irish county would you find the town of Roscrea? In which Irish county would you find the town of Roscrea? And you can phone 1850 715 900. 1850 715 900. We're going to get 2 callers up and put them up after 4 o'clock to be in with the chance of winning that prize. Again, the question, in which Irish county would you find the town of Roscrea? And the phone number is 1850 715 900. Good luck. If you're not in, you can't win. Just do it. That is Kanye West there, Gold Digger. Your annoying texts are still coming in here. Not that they're annoying, but what annoys you? People leaving used tea bags lying around. My old boss and my dad leave the soggy tea bag in a teaspoon or in the sink. It drives me mad. All right, we have a lot to get through, so let's take a quick break back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, you never know what life has in store for you. And I suppose that phrase has never been more apt as it is over the last couple of months. But for Dublin couple Lorraine and Johnny, it has certainly been a roller coaster couple of years. In January 2020, they welcomed their first child, Dylan. Sadly, he tragically died just a few hours old. And months later, they found out then they were expecting again and to their shock discovered it was quads. And in December 2020, four tiny babies came into the world. Quadruplets Nathan, Cooper, Aaron and Eve, and their parents Lorraine and Johnny are on the line to tell me more. Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Hi Catherine, how are you?
Great. And listen, thanks a million for taking the time to chat to me today, because I can imagine time is very precious in your house.
Yeah, it's a welcome break.
Oh, good, good. Well, listen, we saw an incredible story. We saw it in the Sunday Mirror. And Lorraine, I'll start with you. Quads are extremely rare. I don't know, how rare is it in Ireland?
So the only stat I could find, and I couldn't find a stat for Ireland, but the only stat I could find was like worldwide naturally conceived quads is 700,000 to one.
Okay. Right. And so when you're doing this call with us now, who's minding the four of them?
My mom. Okay. So yeah, my mom comes up every day for two feeds, and she's been absolutely invaluable to us. So thankfully she's down there and they've got full bellies, so they're not giving her too much trouble at the moment.
Okay. And Johnny, how are the babies in general? Yeah, how are you finding everything?
They're great, to be honest. You know, that they have their moments, all right, but for the most part they're very good babies. They sleep at night and we're very lucky.
And was it easy to get them into a routine?
So they come out of the ICU. So because they were premature, they had 2 months in the ICU in the hospital. So when they come out of there, the nurses and the midwives in there have them in such a good routine that really we just kind of stuck to that religiously. So we kind of kept them to what they were used to, and that's kind of stayed the same ever since they were born.
Okay.
So thankfully we had a lot of help at the start with the nurses.
Okay. And I we'll get into that, because I'm so intrigued as to how you manage and juggle and kind of, you know, even just the day-to-day stuff of going for a walk and all sorts. But before that, I'd love you to talk to me and tell me a little bit about your son, Dylan. He was born in January 2020, Lorraine.
Yeah. So Dylan was our first pregnancy. We were trying for about a year before we got pregnant with Dylan. And really, like, our whole lives were just all about this baby. We'd just gotten a new house, and Dylan was everything we'd wanted, and we were really, really excited. And I was lucky. I'd had a really, really easygoing pregnancy. I hadn't had any sickness or really any kind of big concerns. Mm. And I went over my due date, and he was induced for 11 days over my due date. So, you know, things were kind of taking a long time, but everything was pretty standard and run of the mill. And the reason they let me go so far over was because, you know, there was no big concerns. He finally then arrived, and again during the labour and everything, there was no big concerns. There was no, you know, questions of like anything kind of to be worried about. But when he was born, there was just this really like awful silence, and you know, he wasn't crying, and we could see from the midwives' faces that there's something just wasn't right. And one of the midwives said to me, she was like, the room is going to fill up with people now, so just don't panic. And that's what happened. A load of doctors came rushing in, and we realised something wasn't right. Mm. And then we later found out that he'd suffered from meconium asphyxiation. So a lot of people would know, especially if you've had a baby who's gone over their due date, babies get meconium into their lungs, and it's quite common. 95% of those babies are able to just clear it with a cough, or sometimes they need a little bit of assistance just to clear their lungs, and then they're perfectly fine afterwards. But Dylan was just that tragic 5% where they just weren't able to clear the meconium from his lungs, so they weren't able to get oxygen into his body. Mm. And then I think it was 9.5 hours after he'd been born, they called us in to tell us that there was nothing more that they could do. And they took his little tubes out, and we held him, and we told him that we loved him, and he passed away.
Johnny, how do you begin to even deal with that loss?
It's very tough, to be honest with you. And like, even still, we have the quads which keep us busy, but even still, you know, we're quite heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And it was it was just such a shock because, as Lorraine said, everything went perfectly.
There was no sign of anything or
no,
any trouble
at all. Nothing at all. And the nurses and the doctors were delighted with how everything was progressing. So it was just such a bolt out of the blue, like, and such a shock. And
I can't even imagine that when you eventually get home, you say your goodbyes and you get home and you'd left the house with such joy, thinking that you were bringing your little baby boy or girl back, and then that's not how it turns out.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just such a strange thing, you know. It's I don't think I'll ever get over that feeling, to be honest with you. It was just heartbreaking, you know.
And Lorraine, you it was quite soon after Dylan that you found out that you were pregnant again. Mm-hmm. Was this something that had you guys talked about it? Had you, it was obviously something that you did talk about, and having a family was a priority for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. We're both quite family oriented people, and we always knew we wanted to have a family. And then after Dylan died and the kind of shock of it, everyone's different, I guess. And, you know, since Dylan died, I've spoke to a lot of people who've lost babies, either stillbirth or neonatal death like Dylan. And everyone's very different for, you know, what they want to do afterwards in terms of having a family and kind of getting back on track. And for me, I was just desperate to get pregnant again. I just, like, every part of me just missed this child that wasn't there, this baby that I'd grown and carried for 9 months. And everything just seemed wrong, like not having him around. And I just needed something to kind of have a bit of hope and something to look forward to again, and something to kind of take our mind off the grief a little bit. So as soon as we were kind of able to, we started trying again. I also thought it might be a long process because it took a year to get pregnant with Dylan. I thought, you know, if I'm pregnant by the end of 2020, I'd be happy, sort of thing. But kind of being realistic, it could be even longer than that. I didn't think we'd get pregnant anywhere near as quick as we did.
But you did, and you went in for an early scan.
Yeah.
And what happened?
So because of what had happened with Dylan, even though there was no issues with my pregnancy, the hospital were really keen to keep a very close eye on me in my next pregnancy. So they brought me in for an early scan. So I wasn't even nine weeks yet. And it was during COVID times. So Johnny wasn't able to come into the scan with me. And he'd said he was just going to wait in the car park. But I'd said, no, just, you know, I'll go in on my own and I'll meet you after work when you get home. And it brought back a lot of memories, obviously, going into the same hospital where I'd had Dylan. And I kept everything together until, I guess, I was in with the sonographer. And then I kind of broke down and started crying. And they were really good in there. And they really looked after me. And they were really very conscious of my history. So we went down and she asked me if I'd done IVF. And in my head, I kind of thought, oh God, I wonder if she's asking me that because it might be twins. And then she started doing the scan and she said, okay, there's a baby and a heartbeat. And I was like, just instant
the relief.
Hearing that, I remember
that moment, because they have to take their time, and it's that 5 seconds or 10 seconds when they're putting the gel on and everything's happening, and you just, it's the silence, but isn't it the longest silence in the world?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And especially since what had happened with Dylan, we were in such a heightened state of anxiety and worry about this pregnancy anyway. So when she said there was a heartbeat, I was just instantly kind of like, OK, thank God. And then she kept moving the wand around and she said, and there's another baby and another heartbeat. And I was like, oh, my God, twins. That's amazing. And then she moved it again and she said, there's a third and a heartbeat. And I was like, what? Triplets? Are you serious? And then she moved it again and said, yep, and there's a fourth baby and a fourth heartbeat. And at this stage, I think my voice kind of raised a few octaves and I just kept on saying, four, are you sure? How could it be four? And I almost felt sorry for the sonographer, because the poor woman He had never found four babies before and was telling this person who had very recently lost a child such crazy news. But yeah, it was just a shock. I understood what she was saying, but I just, you know, she could have been telling me anything at that point. I just couldn't take anything in.
How do you even begin to process it? And have you got twins in your family or on either side, guys?
No, nowhere.
No,
so,
no.
Okay. No. Yeah, no twins, no multiples as far back. I think Johnny's side, his mom, her aunt had twins somewhere. Okay. But it's on the female side whether you have multiples. If it's going to pass down.
Okay.
And nowhere in my family did we see twins.
So do you take a moment in that little room on your own? Do they leave you? Do you take your phone out? What do you do?
So the sonographer, thankfully, the doctor who looks after multiples in the hospital was on that night. So the sonographer went and got her to do a scan just to be completely sure. Mm. And, you know, she was the first person who said, OK, congratulations, you're having four babies. And I was just kind of like, what are you saying to me? And I decided not to ring Johnny. I thought it'd be better to tell him in person. I was conscious that he was going to be driving home from work and things like that. And I also thought he probably wouldn't believe me if I was telling him over the phone. So I just, to be honest, I just, like, you know, I thought about it, but couldn't really take it all in, and just went home kind of just thinking it over in my head. And I think it took a while for it to really sink in.
Sink in. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so how did you find out, Johnny?
Well, I arrived home from work and Lorraine had made a home before me, and I walked in and I thought it was strange because she was taking a video and
of you,
you know, of me, of my reaction. But of course, I knew she was going in for a scan. So I thought it's a bit strange that, like, you know, she's taking a video. But so the scan was on the kitchen table, and them scans are quite difficult to decipher at the best of times anyway.
Yeah.
So I started looking at it, and the fact that she was taking video, it kind of caught me that it was something a bit different. So I said, twins? Is it twins? And Lorraine just said, look again. And I could see numbers. I could see T1, T2, T3, T4. And the T stands for twins. So then I realised that it was four. And I just looked at her and said, no. Four? No, no. And yeah, I was just in shock. Absolute shock.
Amazing. I mean, just amazing. And you go through, I'd imagine, the elation and the disbelief and the shock and then the gratitude, all of those things. But I suppose, Lorraine, then at the end of the day, having gone through what you've gone through, it was going to be a slightly, you know, worrying for you because multiple pregnancy like that, it's a more high risk pregnancy, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, even if this was going to be a Singleton pregnancy, it would have been, you know, I would have been a lot more anxious because of what had happened with Dylan anyway. And their doctor was very clear with us about the risks and everything we should be considering from the very start. So I think after the shock, the next kind of thing we were feeling was dread, really, and worry. And kind of it took us a while to be hopeful or excited about it because we were just, you know, we couldn't. It took us a while to kind of think that we could have a good outcome. We were just, you know, everything had gone so well with Dylan and it was so tragic. So for to have such a high risk pregnancy, and there was an identical set, which even adds to the high risk of it.
Okay.
It took us a long time. There's a lot of ups and downs, particularly in that first week, and a lot of tears and trying to come to terms with what the next few months could be.
Mm-hmm. And your goal really was to get to 32 weeks, right?
Yeah, so that's the as far as they would really realistically let us go with four babies is 32 weeks. Mm. So we knew from the start that they were going to be very premature babies, and we really just started focusing on getting through every week, and every week becoming a milestone, and every scan becoming a milestone. When we went for a scan, we got a good report, and that was really our focus, just started to narrow in just on that.
Mm. And all four of them arrived safely on the 4th of December.
Yeah, the 4th of December. So I had, which was 31 weeks and 2 days.
Okay.
So my C-section was booked for the week after, but I'd gone in at that point. I was getting, my doctor was keeping such a close eye on me. I was getting scans every 2 days, and I'd gone in for just a routine, one of those 2 day scans on that Friday. And she was kind of like, okay, there's, she'd noticed a bit of an issue with the blood flow in one of the baby's cords. So she's like, I think today is going to be the day. And I'd gone in my own because lockdown was over and Johnny had gone back to, down to work at that stage. So he had to before he went into work, he got a phone call from me telling him to come straight to the hospital. And we didn't tell any of our family that I was having the babies that day. We'd even told them that my C-section was booked for a few days after what it was actually booked for. And so nobody knew what was going on. And yeah, they all arrived safely. I went in for my scan at 8:30, and then it was 11:40 when Nathan was born. And by 11:44, they were all out.
Oh my God, amazing. And just the relief as well. And I'd say, I mean, how you kept your emotions at bay, because being in the same hospital and probably with a lot of the same nurses, because you were in the Coombe, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of the same nurses and doctors, because it had been just less than a year that you were in there with Dylan. So the emotional roller coaster, even that in itself, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. That day for you. The babies were all in the ICU, and the ICU is where Dylan died. But the way we tried to look at it was ICU, that's also where Dylan lived. So that's where he was for the few hours of his life that he was alive. So we tried to focus on that and focus on the positivity around it to try and kind of get ourselves through. And yes, there was the same doctor who'd kind of looked after Dylan, was one of the doctors who was looking after the quads. And that was a real comfort to us. They've done so much for Dylan, and we are so thankful for everything that they'd done for him. So it was nice to know that the same doctor who looked after him was looking after the other four as well.
And I know they spent a little bit of time in hospital, and then three of the babies got home. You had Nathan, Cooper and Erin at home, and then Eve was in hospital for a little bit longer. So she was in hospital for Dylan's anniversary.
She was.
Talk us through that day, Lorraine.
Yeah, so that was the 19th of January, and Eve had picked up an infection. So she was on a long course of antibiotics. So the other three were home, but Eve was still in the ICU. And yeah, we knew that day was always going to be a tough day. But having the three babies at home, I guess, was a bit of a distraction. But I obviously was visiting Eve every day in the hospital. Johnny at this stage wasn't allowed because of COVID restrictions to go into the hospital to see her. So I was in the hospital, in the same ward that Dylan had passed away on his anniversary. And to be honest, it was surreal more than anything. I mean, Dylan was on our mind totally that day. But then to have three babies and one of them still not fully well enough to come home, that was kind of the main focus. And so it was a distraction more than anything. But again, I was happy to be able to be in the place that he lived for the short time that he was alive, and kind of think about being with him in that time and trying to find some positivity out of it in what was mainly a very dark kind of day.
Yeah, I can imagine. Life is pretty hectic now. You've got the four of them at home. Johnny, have they all got their own little personalities?
Yeah, they do. They're starting to show it now, all right. And they're all starting to smile now as well and laugh, which is great.
Okay. How do you get out for a walk?
Well, it's there's a bit of planning to it, and we do manage it, but we have a triple buggy.
Okay.
So we get all three of the guys ready and put them in that, and then we have a harness as well. So we put one of the babies in the harness with me.
Okay.
And Lorraine had the triple buggy, and I've got the dog as well. We have a little fur baby as well.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, just to throw into the mix. But you can't go on your own. Like, it always has to be two people right now, obviously, for the walk. Like, have you gone on your own, Lorraine, with them? No.
No, not yet.
You can't.
Not yet. But we could if I took the harness. So if I had one of the babies in the harness and I was pushing the triple buggy as well.
And the dog.
Yeah.
And are you getting any sleep?
They are good sleepers, to be fair. The routine that we have in place is that Johnny does one night feed on his own. So he feeds all four babies at 1 a.m. and then the next feed is at 6, and I do that on my own. So I go to bed about 11 and then I'm not up again for a feed until 6. So I get a good bit of sleep, and then Johnny goes to bed after the 1 o'clock feeds, which is, usually takes about 2 hours to do all of them at 1. So he goes to bed at 3 and then he doesn't get up until about 11. So we usually the way we've worked it is that we both have a good chunk of time where we can get some sleep in the night time, and thankfully they're all sleeping at the moment. After their 9 o'clock feed, they're pretty much conked out, and we wake them up for 1 and then wake them up at 6.
Okay.
So yeah, we are managing to get sleep, and I think that's the most important thing, because you can kind of deal with almost anything throughout the day as long as you've got some sleep.
Absolutely. Yeah. Listen, lads, you've got a lot of fun ahead of you. you've got your hands full, but a lot of fun ahead of you. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and it's a pretty incredible story, and a big shout out to all of the nurses and the doctors in the coombe as well, which I know you wanted
to say. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, best of luck with everything, and we'll be keeping an eye on you guys. All right.
Thanks
a million. Nice chatting to you.
Thanks.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So I think it's fair to say it's been a pretty brutal time for small business owners and people who work in the service industry. And there's a podcast on this topic that caught our eye recently. The title was The Worst Year of My Life. It was recorded by Gary Fox. And Gary is a business owner who's been chatting very openly about what the last year has been like for him. And he pretty much sums it up in the title. Gary, how are you?
Catherine, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, not a bother. So listen, before we chat about 2020, tell us a little bit about you and your business. You're a tip man in Dublin?
A tip man, yeah, in Dublin and now in Wicklow. So yeah, it's been a bit of a long journey. So yeah, before COVID, I was running an Airbnb management company. So we're in the hospitality space. So it was one of the ones kind of first affected. It was one of the ones we saw at first, you know.
Yes.
But before that, we'd been running the business for about 6 years, built it from scratch myself. So yeah, that was the journey to date.
Okay, so you'd been 6 years in business. Host Butlers, that's the name of the company, right?
Host Butlers, exactly.
So
yeah.
January and February, pre-COVID, pre the big March kind of, you know, shit show, shall we call it. How was business before you knew this virus was coming?
Yeah, it was great, to be honest. So our season would generally be from March to October. So the couple of weeks before Paddy's Day would be the start of our kind of season, if you want to call it that way.
Mm.
And it was great. You know, we kind of caught the rising tide of Airbnb 5 or 6 years ago, and had just kind of, you know, when you get to, you know this yourself as being an entrepreneur, you get the business to a certain point and it's kind of optimized and you're going, this is going pretty good. I think that those dreaded words when things are going pretty good. And then we did super team and we'd super operations and super partners that worked with us. And then just around January, just started to see a few strange things happening.
Mm. So I know, because that was around the time, like January, February, you had Asian guests were cancelling. Then, of course, there was the Six Nations, which would have had a big impact for you.
Exactly. We saw it a little bit in January, and we kind of, in typical Irish cynicism, we were like, that's a bit dramatic, isn't it? You know, we were kind of like looking at it, and no one really had heard anything about it, and they were cancelling, and we were like, oh, that's unusual, but it wouldn't be crazy, you know? And then when the Six Nations happened, we were like, oh, is this going to go ahead? Is it not? But it was only really when all the guests started cancelling for Paddy's, and we were like, oh, this is going to be a real dent now. This is going to take, in my head, I went, this is going to be a few weeks now to recover from.
Because Paddy's week, like the week before Paddy's and the lead up and all the Americans coming in, booking Airbnbs. That would have been probably your busiest time of the year, right?
Yeah. We take it for granted because it's just there. But it's on so many people's bucket lists from all across the world. It's such a big thing for them to go to Ireland for St. Patrick's Day. And that would have been our craziest time. And when that stopped, that was the first time I think I was sitting where I'm sitting now. I kind of looked out the window. I was like, that's kind of a bit of a dent now, really. That's a blow. It'll take us a little bit of time to get back from it. And when I look back on it now, you kind of have to laugh because you're like, it just, no one could have foreseen what came.
Mm-hmm. And you had two offices then, like as the kind of the weeks and the months progressed, you had two offices in Temple Bar. You had to let people go. What was that like? Gary, hello, can you hear me? Oh dear, I think we've lost him there, have we? Okay, let's take a quick break and we'll try and get him back on the line.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gary, are you back with us?
I'm back, Catherine. The joys of remote working.
The joys of remote working. There you go. Yeah, I'm talking, for those of you who have just joined us again, I'm talking to Gary Fox, who is the owner, entrepreneur of Host Butlers. And we're talking about what it was like when pandemic hits the tourism industry, which is what you were working in. So essentially, what I'm getting from you, Gary, was that it was the shock and then things were so out of your control. And, you know, you've put everything into this one business. Like, people talk about the word pivot, and people were pivoting and moving and kind of, you know, trying to go online and move their business. And but this was a business that you couldn't actually pivot. You couldn't pivot. You were sort of stuck.
Yeah, precisely. And that was it. It was just a complete loss of control. And when you're working for yourself, you know, it's that kind of sense of control and freedom that you seek out. You know, you want that sense of control. And then when that's gone, there's a massive shock. There's kind of a feeling of, what do I do now? Because you just constantly want to solve the problem. Mm.
So to say the rug was pulled out from you very rapidly is an understatement. And as an entrepreneur, you're somebody who is busy, is constantly thinking, is constantly innovating. So how do you deal with those quieter days with nothing to do, no income coming in? And it's fair to say that, you know, there are so many people, and that's why we're having this chat, there's so many people in the same boat as you.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of recorded the podcast that you alluded to there, The Worst Year of My Life, because I felt a lot of people were talking about it, but no one was actually sharing their story. And without, like, it's how I learn and it's how I empathize with others, is that I listen to their stories. And that's what I do in the podcast, is we share other people's stories. And I felt a lot of people were talking about how hard it was in facts and figures and very much kind of big picture stuff. But it's actually the human element of it that I think is getting overlooked for a lot of small businesses. Because if you spent years working in a small business and you've maybe built it up to two or three people, the impact on that, on yourself, but also on the team that you've built, is huge. And the impact on the mental health side of things as well is kind of, it's getting paid lip service a little bit, but it's, I just felt it was important just to share so people could maybe, so I could kind of understand it myself, I think, so I could share with others. And by kind of talking about it, I could kind of work through it myself. And then hopefully other people could kind of go, oh, well, I actually feel like that. And since I put it out, I've just got so many messages from fellow entrepreneurs and people who aspire to be entrepreneurs going, I felt like that. I thought it was just me, and I'm just so happy that I can relate to it, you know?
Mm. And in the podcast, what really struck me when I listened to it was there was a moment for you when a mate very innocently asked you a very innocent question that sort of was the start of you actually realizing how negatively impacted you were emotionally, how real the whole situation had become for you.
Yeah, and it was such an innocent question, Catherine, and he didn't mean anything by it.
No.
He just asked me, how are you putting down your day? And I was like, I just couldn't say anything. I couldn't think of what to say. Like, obviously, you keep busy and you're doing things. But when he asked me that, it just caused, like, my brain to short circuit. I'm like, well, how am I putting down my day? And it just brought up all these questions about what am I doing? Where am I going?
And is there a shame attached to that?
There is. And it's bizarre because you know things are beyond your control. In your heart of hearts, right? Mm. You know that it's beyond your control and you've done everything you can. But there's an incredible feeling of shame and guilt. The guilt and the shame are the two things that got me, because I just felt so guilty over what had happened to the people that worked with me, the people that were my partners, my transport partners, the cleaning company we used. And I just felt ashamed even having to call them and go, I don't know what to say to you. Mm. You know, I hate ringing someone and going, I've got a massive problem to land on your lap and I've no solution. Mm. And you just feel embarrassed. Mm.
And when it's, you know, no matter what anybody says, when you are, you know, with your job and especially with a business that you've built and grown in the way that you have, it becomes, it's like, it's a huge part of your identity.
Absolutely. And it's like the movie quote, it's not business, it's personal. Mm. Or it's not business, it's personal. It's just, it's so personal.
Mm.
You know, it's so personal to you, especially if it's a business you founded yourself and it's your identity. And I used the analogy on the podcast of, you know, you go to the wedding and you don't know anyone at the table. And it's nearly the first question someone asks you, or you ask someone, so what do you do? You know, and now I'm so conscious of that with people because, you know, a lot of people have lost that purpose of, well, what do I do? What is my identity? What is my purpose? And I think it's when it stops, you kind of really start to question it and you really start to go, wow, my identity is so tied up into what I do.
Mm. And so how have you coped, Gary? Because it's like dealing with a trauma, really, isn't it?
It is. And to be honest, Catherine, I think I looked at it as if I was being stoic. I looked at it as, in, you know what, tomorrow's going to be a little bit better. There's a lesson in everything. And that's how I always kind of approach things.
Mm.
But then it was kind of towards the end of last year, some other things happened that were just beyond my control again. It was like a tipping point. It was like just you're building this pressure and this pressure valve is building in you. And it was only kind of when it got to January and I was like, I need to do something here because we all know nothing was going to change on January 1st. Like, there's no magic bullet on January 1st. But still in all, I had that kind of feeling of, you know, it's going to be a new year. Things are going to change. And then about the second week of January or first week of January, it's just like, no, this is majorly getting on top of me now. I need to do something about it. So it was a combination of things, really. It was just reaching out to really great people around me. Like, I'm very, very lucky to have built up a great network of friends and fellow entrepreneurs who I can speak honestly with and be very open and go, and you know, it's like when you pass someone on the street, you go, how are you? And without even thinking, the answer is grand now yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
It's getting beyond that. Mm. It's getting beyond that question going, actually, yeah, I'm not feeling great, you know.
And you just started going to counselling. You started going to counselling as well, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So both, Catherine, was the answer. Yes, started going to counselling. Like, that wasn't an easy decision, but I just felt it had to be better than where I felt at the minute, you know, and it's not an easy process, but it's been the most beneficial thing I've probably ever done for my own mental health and physical health.
Mm-hmm. To talk about things and get it off your chest. And I suppose, is it a man thing or a businessman thing to not talk about things?
It's a great question. I think it's both, to be honest,
okay.
Because definitely is a man thing. But I think it's a business person thing. I'm sure there's male and female entrepreneurs listening going, yeah, I just felt I'd no one to talk to, because you kind of box yourself into a corner a little because you don't want to show panic to people you work with, or you don't want to show panic to your customers, or, you know, you don't want to admit we could be in trouble here. Mm. And often you've left no one to turn to going, because you don't want to burden your family either. So just having that external body, that external person who can look at it completely fresh and go, do you know what? This is happening. This is okay. You're dealing with it all right.
You're going to get through tools.
Just little ways to think about it.
Yeah.
Little tools you can go, how do you think about it like this? And you're like, okay. Because it's very hard to step away from yourself and look at it dispassionately.
Mm-mm. Well, listen, hopefully we will get you'll get an autumn boost for the business, and maybe even a summer boost. You've got to stay positive, as you say, and as you say in the podcast, you've got to keep walking.
Absolutely.
So listen, lovely to chat to you, and I think it's just, as you said, it's an honest human story that so many people are going through, and it's the human side of it that sometimes we don't hear. We hear the facts and the figures, and sometimes we don't hear the human impact on it. So thanks for taking the time to talk to me today, Gary, and best of luck. All right, it is time to get our quizzers of today up, and we will meet them in just a minute. But let me remind you again what our fabulous prize is. We have two nights in Faith Leg House in Waterford, where you can explore the sunny southeast and beaches and cycling trails right outside this 4-star property. And one of these fabulous people will be winning a 2-night stay with breakfast on both mornings and dinner on one night in the Roseville Rooms restaurant. Faithleg.com is the website where you can find out all the information. And the lucky ducks playing for that prize today are Martina Burke from Cashel in County Tipperary and Tony Smith from Dublin originally, but living in Naas at the moment. Good afternoon, lads. How are ye?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Martina, I'll start with you first. You are player one. How is your day going today?
Well, it's going very well now, Catherine, after getting through to you.
Good. Did you have? Were you ringing off the hook, or did you get through first time?
No, this is the first time. I listen to it all every day. This is the first time I rang, and I couldn't believe it. Somebody actually answered it.
You see, someone's looking down on you. Oh, have you been trying all week?
No, but I usually, if I ring a quiz, like I the other way, I never get through. So first time lucky.
There you go. And who's at home with you today?
My husband Jack and my daughter Ashlyn.
Okay, and are they sitting quietly staring at you, or have you gotten rid of them out of the room?
No, I'm here by myself, so I'm paddling my own canoe at the moment, I think.
Good. Well, sometimes, you know, with less distraction kind of makes you think better.
I know.
How is your how's your general knowledge?
Yeah, I'm pretty okay, but when I'm put on the spot now, it could be a different story. So,
okay.
Fingers crossed, I won't make a show on myself.
I don't think that's going to happen. And come here, I know things have been a little difficult for you of late, but you're back on track now, health-wise. Is that the case?
I know, I'm trying again now, Catherine, yeah.
Good woman.
I had breast cancer there, but I'm back in action now. Hopefully, I can go back to work now in a few weeks, so...
Brilliant. You're fighting fit.
Good.
You're fighting fit. That's great to hear. All right. Hang on the line there, Martina. Tony, how are you, sir?
Hi, Catherine. Good, thank you. Good.
Good. So you are living in Nace at the moment. And what are you up to today?
Well, we're minding one of our grandsons.
Very
currently.
Good. Oh, you deserve a prize anyway. tell me about the how many grandchildren have you got?
We've four grandchildren, four boys, ranging in age from 5 years and 9 months to be precise, to 4 months old.
Okay, so, lovely.
We're minding a 2-and-a-bit-year-old today, so yeah.
Okay, and it's great, obviously, they're in your little bubble, and to be able to see them must just give you such joy.
Oh, it's fantastic, because we're very lucky given the circumstances we find ourselves in. Mm. And, you know, so many people are not able to do what we're able to do. So we're blessed in that point of view. Yeah. Mm.
And there's a big day tomorrow.
Yes, 29 plus that.
Oh, very good. I love it.
And as people say to me, the VAT rate keeps going up, but there you go.
And any plans for the birthday? Not yet, says you. If you win this prize, you won't need to have any sort of a birthday party. Have you got anything planned?
We'll have a get together with our nearest and dearest, yeah, and
Great.
Yeah.
Great. And have you been listening in all week, or who got you on the phone?
No, would you believe I turned on the radio and you announced the quiz, and my wife Marion said, "There you go, ring it.
Give it a go."
So I think I got through on my 70th attempt.
Oh, right. Okay. So you're nothing if not determined. And would you consider yourself quite a lucky person?
I've won a few quizzes in my time on the radio, but I haven't entered quizzes for quite a while now. But you look at it, you know.
You're going to give it a go today. Yeah. Do you watch The Chase?
Exactly. Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah. I love that. It's one of my favourite programmes. Yeah. I'm completely and utterly addicted to it. I think it's fab. Well, anyway, we are going to kick off. Do you guys want to give each other a bit of luck? So it's Martina and Tony. Why don't you wish each other luck?
Best of luck, Tony.
Best of luck, Martina. Yeah, same to you, Martina. Best of luck.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, Martina, we're going to start with you, okay, because you're player number one. And you just need to answer this question correctly. On this day in 1913, the opening of China's first parliament took place in Beijing. On what continent would you find China?
Asia.
Is the right answer. Martina, take a big deep breath. You're off. Tony, over to you. On this day in 1914, the US and Colombia signed a treaty concerning the Panama Canal. On what continent would you find Colombia?
South America.
Is the right answer. Well done, lads. Martina, back to you. Take a listen to this.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and will blow your head clean off, you gotta ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
On this day in 1986, that actor was elected mayor of Carmel, California. Can you name him?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
No.
Good guess, though, but it was unfortunate. It was Clint Eastwood.
Oh.
Hard luck, Martina. Okay, Tony, okay. Back to you. Take a listen to this. On this day in 1923, Edward Mulhare, the Irish actor, was born in Cork. He played the part of Devon Miles alongside David Hasselhoff in that 1980s TV series. Can you name it, Tony?
Oh, God. What was it called? Remember, the car was called Kit. The Equalizer.
No! Oh, hard luck, Tony. It's Knight Rider.
Oh, God.
Oh,
yes.
Hard luck. Okay, we're neck and neck. Martina, back to you. On this day in 2013, Filip Vujanovic was elected as president of Montenegro. Which of these is the capital of Montenegro? Is it Podgorica or Zagreb?
Podgorica.
Is the right answer. Good woman. Well done to you, Martina. Back to you, Tony. On this day in 1939, the King of Albania fled the country after Italy invaded. Which of these is the capital of Albania? Is it Tirana or Belgrade?
Tirana.
Is the right answer. Well done. Okay, Martina, here's your audio clip. Take a listen. Yes, one of my favourite bands. On this day in 1962, Izzy Stradlin, guitarist with that group, was born. Can you name the group?
The Guns N' Roses.
Well done, Martina. Rock on. 3 points to you. Okay, Tony, over to you. Take a listen to this. On this day, Tony, in 1991, that song was at number one. Can you name the singer?
Madonna.
Is the right answer. Okay, Martina, over to you. This is your final question. On this day in 1975, at the 47th Academy Awards, Al Pacino was nominated for a Best Actor Oscar for his role as Michael Corleone in The Godfather Part 2. In which year was Al Pacino born? Was he born in 1940, 1944 or 1948?
1940.
Martina, that is the right answer. Well done, you. Okay. Tony, you have to get this right to stay in the game. Otherwise, Martina is off on her merry way to Waterford. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Go on.
Still on this day in 1975 at the 47th Academy Awards, Robert De Niro won the Best Supporting Actor Oscar for his role as Vito Corleone in The Godfather Part 2. In what year was Robert De Niro born? 1943, 1946 or 1949?
I'll go with 43.
That, my friend, is the right answer. Well done. So we are neck and neck, which means, guys, we have a tiebreaker. And we've had a lot of tiebreakers this week. But we asked you this before you guys came on air. And the tiebreaker question was, on this day in 1816, Sir Frederick Burton, painter, was born in Carrafin, County Clare. According to Google Maps, how long would it take to cycle from Carrafin in Clare to Athlone in Westmeath? And we wanted the answer in hours and minutes. Martina, can you remember what you said?
Four.
You said 4 hours. Tony, can you remember what you said?
Oh, yeah, I said 8 hours and 10 minutes. But you
said 8 hours and 10 minutes. You were on the go slow, Tony.
Probably was, yeah.
The actual correct answer, 5 hours and 7 minutes to cycle the 103 kilometres, which means, Martina, you are the winner of our quiz today.
Oh,
congratulations
great.
To you.
Thank you very much, Catherine.
You're welcome. Tony, we're going to send
Martina. Well
thank you, Tony, thanks.
Tony, we'll send you out a Ray D'Arcy cup for your birthday tomorrow.
Thanks very much indeed, Catherine. Thanks a lot.
Fabulous. Thanks for joining us today. Martina, are you looking forward to the trip?
Oh, I can't wait. Thanks very much, Catherine.
Who are you going to take with you?
Oh, sure. I might put him out of my hat here and see.
Put him out of my hat. Love it. Well, you see, you can keep them on your toes now. You can keep them going for another few weeks before the restrictions are lifted. You have plenty of time. See who's going to mind you, look after you, spoil you, and you can make your decision based on that. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks
today. Catherine. Have a lovely afternoon.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
There is still a lot of irritated people out there. Carol says, Catherine, my pet hate is people who don't use their indicators, especially at roundabouts. It's so common now. I don't know how they pass their driving tests, and it seems to be for every age group. Anne says, I hate when my husband leaves the stones of the dates and prunes at the bottom of a dirty cereal bowl in the sink after breakfast. Somebody else, when people refer to their offspring as my kids or worse, me kids, their children, only goats have kids. Also, words that are shortened. It's electricity bill, not lecky bill. It's St. Patrick's Day, not Paddy's Day. I'm going to stop there. Clearly that person could have gone on and on. But you know what? Let's chill. Let's get a bit of Blondie. That is a fabulous Blondie. Your irritated texts are still coming in. Catherine, why did you do it? Why did you start me? I have reams of stuff, things that drive me crazy. Emptying the contents of the grocery shopping bags out onto the counters. Why do you not empty them straight into the press? Why double the job? Not just leaving one pair of shoes in the doorway, but several pairs plus toolboxes. Any tools that have been used left at the front door and I have to trip over them. Leaving the empty plastic water bottles on the kitchen counter, then letting them accumulate and not putting them into the plastic recycling bin. I don't know if this is the same person. Is this somebody's partner, or is this partner and children responsible for all of these things? Because this listener continues, putting one plastic bottle from the gathered bundle into the recycling bin and not squashing it down so it doesn't fill up quickly, because invariably I have to empty it. Getting out of bed and not turning down the duvet, drawing the curtains and opening the window. I could go on and on and on. There you go. All right. This time last year, Ray spoke to Fred Murray, and Fred was fundraising for cancer research with a very unusual method of growing a comb over. And he joins me on the line now. Fred, how are you, sir?
Catherine, how are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. I don't know if I've actually met anybody in recent times with a comb over.
You won't. It's a rare thing.
Okay.
It's a rare and beautiful thing.
It's a rare and beautiful thing. Okay, so remind us how this all started for you.
It was back in November, October 2019. A friend of mine, she was very sick at the time from cancer, and it was just off the back of November. And I never had the courage to grow a comb over because I had the idea quite a long time ago. And then my friend got really sick from her cancer. So I thought, you know, there's taboos out there. One is growing a moustache, but growing a comb over would be, you know, a far greater challenge.
That pips it to the post for sure.
Yeah, I think so. So I thought, like, you know, growing a Movember moustache would, you know, as good as it is, you know, it'd only be a month long and, you know, they're a bit commonplace. So a comb over is something that's kind of disappeared from Irish society. So I'm trying to reintroduce it slowly, strand by strand.
Okay. And how long have you been growing the comb over now?
Today is the 531st day of my comb over.
Okay. And just so, because I'm looking at a photograph of you here and you are...
Try not to blush. Don't blush.
It's fair to say you're bald and then you've got the what I call the side bits. Is that fair enough? Like, this isn't even mentioned. This isn't even before you started the comb over.
Yeah, I mean, like, I used to keep my hair, I have, so, since I was about 23, I shaved my head every second, third day, so I had no hair. Very bald. I've had no hair longer than I've had hair, if you know what I mean.
Okay, what age are you now?
Yeah, I'm 45.
45, okay.
45 years of age, yes. Yeah,
okay.
Very old.
So fair to say you've been follically challenged. And so for somebody like you then to grow the comb over, I mean, it's quite it's quite the statement. So how do you even begin to go about it, start styling it, making it go up that
way? Basically, to begin with, you say a few prayers.
Right.
And then you basically say goodbye to being intimate with any person for years, maybe. I don't know.
Are you in a relationship?
I haven't. I was single before this began. So it's kind of like, it's been the best and worst time to grow one. Because I kind of was like, right, well, I'm going to grow this thing. And then I'm pretty much not going to meet a girl for 2 years longer, you know. And then the pandemic kicks in and it's like, well, I'm not going to meet one anyway. You know, I wasn't exactly beating them back with a stick either. So,
But you must have been fairly committed to it. I mean, and I mean, we're having a laugh now, but this is very much on the back of fundraising for your friend Fiona, who did sadly pass away, right?
She did, About 3 weeks after I started, once I started the campaign, I let her know, and she was delighted. She passed away. She had breast cancer since 2009. And unfortunately, it kind of, she got the treatment and stuff, and then it came back, and then she basically lost. She battled really hard and very long, and she was quite inspirational to a lot of people around her, because she held out for as long as she did. So she passed away, unfortunately. But so, you know, I kept going and persevered, and you guess you grow the sides to begin with, so you basically just stop cutting your hair. And thankfully, my local barber, Abner Browns, cuts my hair for free. Well, he pays me to cut my hair. Okay. Third time I go in, he gives me, the price of a haircut. And then I put that on my donation page. So, yeah. And then, like, there just before Christmas, he trimmed one side quite short. And then the other side is quite long, the left side. So to get the classic swept over, comb over look, you have to kind of keep one side short. And then the other side long. Like, think of Jack Charlton.
Yes.
He had one very long side, and then he swept it over to match the other side.
But you see, this is it. I was going to say, who is your king of comb overs? Jack Charlton, obviously.
It has to be Jack Charlton.
Who else, actually? Like, I'm trying to think who else.
He wasn't really a hero of mine, but Charlie Haughey had a fine comb over.
He did.
It is, yeah.
But
yeah,
you see, the thing about this, Fred, is that they were much older gentlemen, and I'm looking at you here. You're 45. This is why it's so ridiculous. Can I ask you, like, when you're walking around, what sort of reaction are you getting? You're not getting very many phone numbers, clearly.
No, and I get, I kind of wear a hat quite often anyway because of the sun, and then also it's cold. So, but I have been told, some kid, I took my hat off and he said, he sighed. He was like, please put your hat back on. Other people that follow me on Instagram, like, they say, well done, and they've donated and stuff, but they're like, I can't even look at your pictures. They make me feel sick. So, yeah. So
there is something quite creepy about it. I will be honest with you.
sort of. I'm trying to bring it back, you see, because it was a very common hairstyle for most men. Because if you think back, after, like, people shaving their heads was sort of a shame thing, like, especially after World War concentration camps. If you think about things like that, it's a very negative thing to shave your head very short. So men who lost their hair at a young age kind of just probably had a side parting, and they just kept brushing it to the side, and their hair slowly thinned out, and then they just maintained the illusion, if you know what I mean. So it wasn't a popular thing to shave your head if you were bald, as definitely in Ireland anyway. When I was growing up, I was actually scared of anybody when I was a kid who had a shaved head. Because of, like, neo-Nazis and things.
And can I ask you today, like, so today is pretty windy out, right? So, like, what are you gelling or like, what sticks it to the head?
Chewing gum and blue tack. No, you kind of, like, you go out for a stroll and you're like, oh, geez, it's windy. And I found out since I've grown my hair is kind of greasy. So after a few hours of washing it, it's kind of like, it sticks down quite easy, actually.
You're really selling yourself to the single markets here, Fred. You are really selling yourself.
You look, when I got the phone here, your phones will be red hot with the girls calling in saying, get this guy, I need to meet him. So,
listen, I think you're brilliant, I have to say. How can people support your fundraising efforts?
Well, we had loads of plans, but COVID hit and we had to put them in on hold for the moment. Like, there was a fundraiser organized, my local cafe, Ernesto's and Rat Mines. We just had to stop everything. We had gigs organized. So basically, if someone wants to donate, they can follow me on Instagram and Facebook, and I'm Comb Over for Cancer.
Two of those.
Yeah, it's just one word, Comb Over for Cancer. And then that will link it to my GoFundMe page. And everything I raise basically is going straight to three cancer charities. And they are Avian's Pink Tie, Breast Predict, and Our Lady's Hospice and Care in Harold's Cross.
Fair play to you. And listen, when you've
will
raised
you be,
all that money,
donating to the old I
will.
Comb Over for
I
cancer?
Will. Oh, anybody who does that much to themselves, I absolutely will. And as soon as you've raised enough money, shave it off, and I'll help you get a date on Tinder. How about that?
Oh wow!
Fred,
thanks a million.
Nice chatting to you today. Have a great afternoon. Thanks a million. That is all from me today. Sarah is next on Drive Time, and I'll be back tomorrow.
It's the Ray Dalton Show on RT Radio 1.